Good morning, WQBX audience, and it's great to have you here with us today. We have an absolutely tremendous program that we're going to be bringing to you. We're going to be talking about a church in the St. Louis area that's doing great work. And then also we're going to be talking about Hope House, which is a tremendous ministry that's taking place in our community here in Central Michigan. And you're going to want to stay tuned for all this program. Before we get to that, I wanted to also mention to you that if you want to listen to this program over again, because I know there's a lot of information, those of you that are listening are probably driving somewhere right now. And if you would like more information, you can go right to our website. We keep all these podcasts available there. They're available on every format, actually. And if you'd like to go there to connect with it, you can do that at agchurch.net. That's alphageorgechurch.net. And you'll have the information there that you can connect with and be able to hear this broadcast over again, and anything that you might miss while you're driving. Somebody cut you off, you missed a really important point, but you have the opportunity to be able to go back over that. So as I said earlier, we've got some great pastors. I've known these two young men for quite a while, and in the community, and I'm really excited. I've been really looking forward to this interview. And so, guys, I'm going to have you introduce yourselves to everybody, if you would.
All right.
In the QBX audience.
First of all, thank you for referring to me as a young man.
Yes,
I don't feel like a young man anymore.
I know. But you are to me.
Okay. I am Nathan Workman. I am a co-pastor here at Restoration 5812 Church and co-director of Gratiot County Hope House.
Gratiot County Hope House.
Yeah,
great.
And I'm Jake Gregory. I'm Nathan's counterpart. I'm the other co-pastor and other co-director here at the church and Hope House.
Okay. Now, where did you come from, Pastor Jake?
Well, I'm from Michigan originally.
Oh, you are? Okay.
Yeah, I grew up in north of Metro Detroit, kind of where the Thumb and North Metro Detroit overlap. And went away to Illinois to school for a few years. Wife, we lived there for a year after we got married. She was a children's and youth pastor, and then we're looking to come back to Michigan. And through our district network and stuff, the St. Louis Church was open, and it was a good area for us. It was kind of right in the middle of the state. I got family all over the state, and so we're central. And we came here 10 years ago this spring.
Wow! Wow! I thought you'd been here longer than that.
No, 10 years. Yeah, it was. 10 years ago, in March, we interviewed. 10 years ago this month,
that we moved. How about here. That? So. And Pastor Nathan, where are you from?
I was born in Anderson, Indiana, while my dad was in school at Anderson. It was college at that point, now Anderson University. And my dad was in school to be a pastor. And so we have lived kind of all over the country, as far west as Cody, Wyoming, as far east as Centerville, Virginia, which is just outside of D.C., Michigan a couple of times, so kind of have a broad range of places I've lived. Came to Michigan out of college. My wife and I had gotten married a year before, and kind of went up to work with my dad in Muskegon as an unpaid position doing youth ministry, and then spent the next 12 years in two different churches in doing student ministry.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you guys are both pastoring at the two different churches, and then what happens? Where did this all start coming to, about the church working together and doing? Because that's kind of how it started before even Gratiot Hope House came along.
Well, actually, the conversation about Hope House begins and really gets off the ground before we ever talk about coming together as a church.
Yeah,
the two churches becoming one. Mm-hmm. We had both had some experience with homelessness, people kind of knocking on our door, asking for help. As we started sharing those stories, then our initial thought was, well, if this is a reality in our community, what should be, now this is, again, before we're talking about merging churches or anything like that, we're just two local pastors,
right,
relatively small congregations. What should the church's response be to this?
Yeah.
So as we started talking about what that response could be, We were just downtown this past week on Monday morning looking in the windows of what used to be a little bakery coffee shop and said, this is the place that the conversation about Hope House started.
Really?
Yeah. We met in there, I don't know, once a week for, I don't know, a couple of months.
Yeah.
Hammering details out.
How about just trying to figure out. I remember sitting there one day and I said to Nathan, do you know how to start a business? No. I said, me either. I said, how do you make something exist? Right. How do you, you know, and we didn't know what we were doing. And the Lord really started answering prayers before we even knew how to pray them.
Okay.
Because, you know, that was just one conversation. And then, I don't know, within 24 hours, I'm getting an email from somebody in the area who said, here's what you need to do to start a business. I didn't ask. They just said they knew what we were working on.
Right.
And offered that, you know, that insight because, you know, we didn't know. It, as Nathan said, we had both had these experiences. Mm-hmm. And I had been in a series of workshops and conferences with this growing sense in my own spirit and in the spirit of the church that we had to do more than exist for ourselves.
Right.
We needed to be a church that was, the one question that really encapsulated that was, if your church closes doors tomorrow, mm-hmm. would anybody in the community care?
Right.
And so through a lot of different things, I felt impressed. I needed to better understand homelessness in our community. And I started making phone calls all around. Yeah, I just Googled homelessness in Gratiot County, and there wasn't much out there at the time.
Right.
But what little bit hit, I'd make a call, which would lead to another call and another call, and I began to formulate this idea, knowing it was way more than I could do on my own. That's when Nathan and I said, let's do this. And that was the fall of 2017. Mm-hmm. And over the course of the next 6 months or so, we got people in the community behind it, incorporated, and we opened the shelter in January of 2019 as just a seasonal cold weather
kind right. of deal.
And it was in the midst of that first season, we had a really cool opportunity to go together to preach at another local church. The pastor wanted us to come in and talk about the shelter, what God was doing.
And he really wanted us to share kind of the origin story
yeah.
of why we were opening the shelter in the first place, because we had laid out in a number of conversations just with local pastors, some informal settings, some just around the breakfast table.
Right.
This is a theological thing that we feel like we have to respond to.
Right.
So he said, I would love for you guys to come and tell my church.
Oh, wow.
It was really cool.
It was a really, and the unique thing about the invitation was he asked us to bring our churches with us.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
So that Sunday, we decided, I mean, we didn't hold services in our buildings. The three churches came together at that one location. They were gracious to ensure that we all three offerings were received in that space, that we all, everything was, you know, was credited. And so we both walked away from that going, wow, what if we could do this thing? I mean, just there was like this synergy that just clicked. And both of us went, what if we could do this thing together?
Yeah.
Now, neither one of us said anything about it because we're sister denominations at that, you know, Church of God, Anderson and Church of Nazarene, but two different denominations. Where do you even start with that conversation? We're
right.
in the middle of this big task.
Right.
The shelter was just, I mean, we were just days from opening at that moment. Yeah. And so we were quiet. I mean, nobody said anything about it for probably a month or better. And then you guys had a church meeting. Mm-hmm. And finally, in that context, somebody spoke up. And I remember that next day, Nathan came into the office for the shelter. And I said, how'd your meeting go yesterday? I said, well, it's funny you should ask. you should know the people at our church are talking about merging with your church. And I said, really? And so I recounted how I walked away from that service that day. And he said, I walked away with that same thing. Turns out a bunch of my people had as well.
Wow.
And same thing, but nobody was talking about it because how do you even start that conversation?
Sure.
So then when I next took the conversation to my leaders, I said, I was kind of leading them into the conversation and somebody just goes, you mean like merging with the Church of God? It's like, yeah, let's talk about that.
Right.
Well, we'll find out all these couples have been walked away from that same church service, right?
Right.
And then as the conversation grew more, those who weren't in leadership walked away with mm-hmm. that same sense. And before we knew it, we had this real sense that this is where God, not that we knew how it was going to happen.
Right.
And so then, you know, we closed the shelter for the season in April, 5 years ago, 5 years ago this week, actually. Yeah. It was April 6th. And immediately started figuring out how do we start worshiping together. And by that fall, we had kind of functionally merged. We were worshiping as one church and beginning the process of figuring out how do you make, you know, two things into one.
Right.
And it was, when you look back, man, it was a whirlwind 18
yeah.
months.
Yeah.
2 years.
And we wanted to be very cognizant of the fact that nobody really does this kind of thing. And
right.
So we really pressed into our state and denominational leaders and said, this is kind of what we're talking about. We don't really know. We don't even know if this is a good idea. We don't know if this is possible.
Right.
But we want you to understand what we are talking about and thinking about. And the initial response from everyone involved was, well, if this is the kingdom of God at work, then we're not going to stop it.
Right.
Let's just be really aware of the steps that we need. Let's move a little bit slow. Let's not get carts in front of horses and all that kind of stuff.
Sure.
And so the support and encouragement was really powerful in those initial months. Really powerful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you guys ever like just go, what are we doing?
All the time. Like, yes. Yeah. When I first told my parents about this, so yeah. And I said to my parents, I said, you can't say anything to anybody, but I need to tell somebody what's going on. And so I said to my parents, we're in the midst of launching the shelter for its first short. What was that first
11 weeks,
11 week long was the first stretch the shelter was open. And that's when we started just having some, this is kind of what we're thinking. This is probably a dumb idea, but we need to share it. So I told my parents about it, and my mom was just retelling me this the other day. She said, we got off the phone with you and we're like, man, doesn't he ever do anything that's simple or easy or straightforward?
Right. Yeah.
Apparently not. I'm too dumb to do that kind of stuff. Let's go towards the hard stuff.
Yeah. Well, I have two pastor friends. They're both Wesleyan, and they were talking about joining together, and that never happened because they just couldn't get everybody on. So, I mean, it is a miraculous thing.
Yeah, it really is.
I think we were talking at breakfast one of the Monday mornings that I had the opportunity to be there, and I had said, well, how do you guys jive all that? And I think you told me, well, really the only difference isn't really doctrinally, it's polity. It's how we run the ministry.
Right.
And that was really the only difference between the two. You just had to find some way to.
Yeah. And what it came down to. So, and of course, remember that, you know, what, 7-8 months into the merging process, COVID hits, right?
Yes, right.
And we rolled out, so part of the merging was doing some remodeling of the building to create more office space. And in some ways, because it had been decided at that point that this building on 46, which is the restoration of 5812 Church and where Hope House is, was going to be the primary church building.
Right.
And we wanted it to have even the building itself to have some fresh start for this new merged body.
Right.
So that there wasn't, we didn't want to create an environment where it was, well, this is how we've always done things, or this is this sacred doorway in the church, you know,
right.
whatever.
Right.
And so we rolled out a giving campaign to help do that on March 8th, 2020.
Okay. Oh, wow.
And March 13th, everything shut down. We didn't have another service in the building for months. And by that point, walls had already started coming down and carpet tore up.
Yeah.
So all that to say, we were birthed in the very difficult season, which came with, it was not a little pain.
Right? No, it's a big pain.
It was, and we lost folks like most every church did during COVID.
Sure.
And I think for some, the merger was a convenient excuse to walk away. For others, COVID was a convenient excuse to walk away.
Right.
But we, by the time the dust settled, you know, we were a completely different church in a lot of different ways.
Yeah. So it actually, even though it was bad, it ended up being good because it actually melded the two units together.
And if anything else, it was kind of a sifting process for those that were here when we were able to reconvene in person. They were in.
Okay.
They were all the way in. This is my church now. That's the phrase that we heard. This is my church. This is my church.
Right. Yeah, that is totally awesome.
Yeah.
So I remember back, we used to get emails from you or Nathan. We have a family that needs a place to stay. Hmm. Anybody want to pay for the hotel? Because that's where we used to put it. We didn't know. I think they were making a real sweet deal, but I think that's all that was staying there was people that were, at one point, was people that were homeless and then eventually shut down. But so when you guys started doing this here with Gratiot Hope House, what did that look like in the beginning? And now what does it look like now?
Well, it is miles different just from an operational standpoint.
Okay.
So that first 11-week season, it was all volunteer driven.
Right.
And that 11 weeks was really tremendous. Incredible volunteer support.
Right.
Throughout the county. Just the number of people that we had that had volunteered at least one shift was just off the charts.
It was and were they bringing food in for folks too?
Yes, they were. They were doing everything from a morning shift and getting breakfast together and helping people get out the door in the morning to evening shift of checking folks in to overnight shifts where someone would stay here all night. And sometimes that was us. That was a lot of volunteer people that did that as well. And then making food and bringing it in and sitting and eating with the guests. So that initial season and the first year after that, because we were started as just a cold weather from November to April.
Right.
That first full year was all volunteer. And then, of course,
that year, which would have run fall of 19 to March of 20, because when COVID hit, we ended up shutting down about 3 weeks early.
Yeah.
We had 700 volunteers in the course of
my goodness. Wow.
And, you know, we had a lot of churches. I mean, and this, so the initial conception for the shelter was rotating. Other counties do this. Where I grew up down in Macomb County did this. Isabella County does this, where the shelter kind of sets itself up for a week within a local church. People are housed there. That church provides the volunteer and the staffing. Maybe you get a couple of churches who will partner together for a week. And then after the week is up, everything gets torn down, shipped off to the next church and set up again. And that was where else were we going to do it? Mm-hmm. We learned that Gratiot County just does not have the infrastructure to support a rotating shelter.
Right.
You don't have countywide transit. You know, in Isabella County, for example, you're pretty much just staying within Mount Pleasant. Here you were looking at, you know, 4 million municipalities, Breckenridge, you know, Ithaca, Alma, St. Louis. And one church and one might say, I don't think our city's going to let us do this, even though legally maybe they couldn't, but nobody, didn't know how to fight those battles.
Right.
I mean, and it was the unknown, right? Nobody was being malicious. It was just the unknown.
Sure.
And so this was that fall of 18, we were like, we scrapped the whole plan. And we just chucked the whole thing. And we said, okay, here in Nazarene Church, we've got a whole wing, the building we're not using. We'd had other plans for that to be like a transitional shelter with some efficiency apartments and things. And we set that aside and we said, let's have the shelter in this space this first season. Give us more time to come up. And midway through that first 11 weeks, we realized this is home. I mean, it just worked so well.
Yeah.
And we've been here ever since. Now, the biggest change has been with COVID, we lost all that volunteer force.
Right.
And
you guys shut down you had to shut down the one.
So we shut down in March of 2020, a couple weeks early. And the intent was to reopen then that fall. As things were kind of settling down, this was right before kind of things spiked again. But our intent was to open up. But we realized before we could even open that we didn't have the volunteers in place. We just didn't have the response.
Right.
Because people were still legitimately afraid. Yeah. They were kind of like, I don't think I can do anything yet.
Yeah.
Which we could look down and went, okay, that's entirely fair.
Sure.
And so we had to, basically, we didn't really have anything happening.
We had a handful of people who stayed largely unsupervised for the length of the season.
Yeah.
We were just kind of here helping, you know, meals were provided.
Checked in with them regularly.
But okay. It would look nothing like normal operations. I mean, we're talking, I think we housed maybe 8 people that whole season.
Yeah.
Right? Oh, wow. Just low, because that's all we could do. But that became the catalyst to go, okay, if we're going to make it, we got to really make a go of this thing to make it a full-time operation, because it was obvious at that moment the volunteers weren't coming back. And and again, in that moment, it was still COVID, but what we were all beginning to see was the landscape had changed forever. Right? The dynamics of how people think and operate and organize their time right. was all changing.
Yes.
And churches, you know, like I said, that first year we had, two seasons, we had a lot of church support. At that moment, churches weren't even all worshiping in person,
right?
Yeah. Let alone volunteering in local missions,
right? Yeah.
And so that was where we said, okay, we need to make the move towards full time, which opened the door for bigger funding opportunities with state funding and things like that. And in the fall of 21, we opened to be a full time shelter.
Okay.
We've been open ever since.
Wow. Well, I think it was that spring of 21 that you had gotten a couple phone calls or emails from people that were in helping agencies saying, hey, the federal government has just released a bunch of money for stuff that you're doing. I think it could push you guys into the next level of service to the homeless.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, Jake did the lion's share of all of that work of getting the grants in place, all that kind of stuff, so that we could be ready and to launch in November of 21. That included hiring people before we had the money in hand to actually pay them.
Oh, wow.
Because the grants, we had filled out the grants, we were approved, but none of that money had started coming in yet until the season actually started.
Yep.
Wow.
So that was one of those tightrope things going, we've hired these people with a promise to pay. I hope we can pay.
Yeah, really?
And
wow.
There have been many moments. I still have these moments, but during those weeks in particular, I mean, even the move. So what we did in the winter of 21, we said the catalyst was we restructured things. So two things are happening at once. The transition with the church had giving way down, and the church obviously could not at that moment afford to fund both Nathan and I's salaries full time, because that had always been our full time jobs. The shelter was a side
job.
And in that moment, we said, okay, we need to redistribute things. And so we restructured our own responsibilities to where the shelter became my full-time job and was compensated as such, part-time with the church, and Nathan was the inverse, full-time with the church, part-time with the shelter. And we redistributed responsibilities accordingly and focuses. But even that was a step of faith going, okay, by doing this, now we've created opportunity to work towards the next steps. And like Nathan said, by the time we got into that summer and then that fall, all the nets have been cast for funding opportunities. How do we do this? We get to the fall and we're putting things in place, praying that money comes through.
Mm-hmm.
Many times during that process, I'd go, okay, Lord, don't forget, this whole thing was your stupid idea.
Right.
Right. And I said it tongue in cheek, but I can remember years before, within the first year I was here in St. Louis, we had this kind of all church meeting and we were using language of recreation.
Yeah.
And I asked a question, so what would the church look like if it were to be recreated? Mm-hmm. Asked people to start painting pictures. And somebody said, well, Isabella County started a shelter last year. Maybe we could do something like that. We need this. And I remember thinking, who in their right mind would want to start a homeless shelter?
Right.
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 Lo and behold, 3 years later, it was me.
Yeah.
And so when I remind the Lord, this was your stupid idea because sometimes it feels like it was a stupid idea.
I was thinking, here you both come out of seminary, you're carrying your Bible, you're saying, man, I'm ready to preach the gospel, and you have no idea what lies ahead. And I mean, I don't think this is what you guys were dreaming about when you walked out of seminary. You know, preaching to the masses and all the things that we think of when we're, you know, with all our sermons that we have, and then this is where God leads you guys. Mm-hmm. But the truth is that you're not just preaching the gospel, you're living the gospel with people, and you're helping people in their journey. Folks don't really realize how much homelessness there is in the communities that you guys are serving in. And, you know, we look at Alma and St. Louis and Breckenridge and, our communities here and think, well, there surely can't be that many homeless here.
Yeah.
But there's a lot more that's here than what folks are seeing.
Well, yeah. And the context that we live in and what is largely a rural community, it looks different than it does in Grand Rapids, in Detroit.
Yes.
Because you go down to Grand Rapids and there's a stretch on Division and you know it as soon as you hit it. It is where a lot of homeless congregate because there's a couple of soup kitchens. There's a couple of places to stay.
Okay.
And you know that you're there. Now, it is, I have walked through there a couple of times and I've not felt in danger. They are largely very gentle individuals.
Oh, yeah.
But you know that you're there.
Yeah.
Here, it looks completely different. And this was the big thing that we learned is that in a rural community that have these like urban little woods and forests, that is where a lot of them congregate.
Right.
So if they're living outside, they will get tents and they will sleep outside in these urban woods. The house that I used to live in, right behind it was a cemetery. And that cemetery is really cool. A lot of rolling hills, a lot of places to hide. In the back corner of that cemetery, now you had to look to find it.
Yeah.
Because they had kind of disguised it, but there was a little encampment of a handful of individuals living back there.
Mm-hmm. Deer blinds are a big one.
Yep.
You know, because they're removed out in the middle of fields and woods and they're unoccupied for, you know, 10, 11 months out of the year, depending on, you know, what guys hunt. And so they're a great place to hide out. And every fall, their calls start coming in, either to us, the police departments. Somebody's been living in my deer blind. What do we do about it?
Kind of thing.
So they do. They remain largely hidden. The count, we don't have 2023's reports yet released, but 2022... it was like 148, I think, homeless in the community.
Okay.
That had, and that's just those who received some degree of service, right? Mm-hmm. So they had to have had a connection with the shelter, with ACAP, which is the Housing Assessment Resource Agency, or just a couple select others, and to be counted, right? So that all of those that slipped under the radar aren't counted. That's also only those who are Category 1 homeless, meaning they're sleeping somewhere not meant for habitation.
Right.
A deer blind, a car, a camper, a tent, a motel that somebody else is paying for. That doesn't include those who are Category 2, which is couch surfing and doubled up.
Right.
So, you know, when you've got a family with another family or a couple of kids staying with them, that's Category 2. That doesn't even count in that.
Wow.
And when you factor that in, you're into the hundreds.
Yeah, I heard it's a lot bigger once you add the
when
category
you add that in,
two.
Like, this number is years old because we don't count it the same way as we used to. The last year they counted Cat 2, it was like 600 people for Gratiot County.
Wow.
Right? Because and because that, it's still a homeless experience, but because you've got a support network in place, you're not utilizing the agencies, so it goes under the radar, and you don't know how big.
My goodness. Wow. Well, thank you guys for your faithfulness in doing this. And, you know, I know there's been a lot of risk involved, obviously, to get to this point. I want to give our audience at least a little bit of opportunity to know how they can connect with what you guys are doing. So if you want to just tell your website and where you guys, how they could get a hold of, you know, check out what's happening here.
You can find us on Facebook, Gratiot County Hope House, and there's updates and things there. Our website is GC, as in Gratiot County, GCHopeHouse.org, and there's information there about how to contact us, volunteering, donations, all of that can be done.
Excellent. So you still are taking volunteers to help out?
Yeah.
For
yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
And really, if there is anything, the best way to get a hold of us is through Facebook Messenger. That is something that we check on a regular basis. It always pops up on our phones and computers and all that kind of stuff. That is the best way. If you have questions, if you want to volunteer, if there's something you want to donate, that is the easiest and most effective way to get a hold of us.
Perfect.
Of course, calling as well. But
and then the church services, when are they here at?
11 o'clock Sunday mornings here. Same building, just different sides of the same building.
So okay.
Right on M46.
Right on M46.
Just west of St. Louis.
Yeah. Yep. Well, I was telling Jet, there's only a few of us on M46.
Right.
I'm on M46. You guys are,
yeah.
And he's on M46.
Yes. Yeah.
And then you got to go all the way to out to M46
Tabernacle
to find another one on 46.
Yeah.
But thank you guys so much for sharing your hearts with us. And we want to encourage you that are in the WQBX audience. This is a great, great ministry that's happening. And, you know, if you really have really struggled with how can I help people? How can I help the homeless? How can I help the people that are down and out? This is a great way to be able to do that. And there are lots of people as, you know, if you see a car packed with stuff, that might that probably means somebody's living in that car. And but there are great stories of people that their lives have turned around. I was thinking about one of the one of my men from the area here that he had gone through a divorce. He lost his job. He was lost his home, lost everything. He was living in his van. He called up. This was years and years ago before Hope House and said, hey, could you just buy me some gas for my vehicle so I can heat it up in the winter here so that I can at least. So he was sleeping in there. But thankfully, some people, he found some opportunities to be able to get out of where he was. He took some classes that were for free from the state. And now he's got a state job that he's working down at Lansing, Michigan. And he's got his own place and his life is all, it's just a beautiful story. But that's the kind of things that Hope House is doing. So I just want to encourage you, if you'd like to support their ministry and what they're doing, there's a great way to do that through their website. And to connect with them on Facebook with Gratiot County Hope House. And I think it'll be a great, great blessing to you. Well, our time is up for this week. We will look forward to next week being back with you on WQBX, and we'll be sharing more with you on Unscripted.